From Minneapolis's historic West Bank, you're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio. KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We're streaming and archived on KFAI.org. It's where community has always grown.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasa. There are times when it's difficult to make sense of the experiences we have in life. How are we to get ahead without money? How are we to overcome intangible obstacles? How are we to move through the challenges, difficulties, and limitations we face at every turn? It may seem that no matter how hard you try, something or someone is there to block you. In those times, remember the words of Dr. Benjamin Mays. It is not your environment. It is not your history. It is not your education or ability. It is the quality of your mind that predicts your future. Affirmation. I take the time to develop my own mind. This comes from the book Acts of Faith, Daily Meditations, Iyanla Van Zandt. We are talking with Sarah Elliston, her new book, Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. How did Lessons from a Difficult Person come about?
It's embarrassing, but I was 50 years old when I had a supervisor whom I esteemed very highly, who said to me, you know, you do wonderful work. She was praising my work. And she said, sometimes you have this little habit that gets very annoying for the rest of us. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, well, you know, you lose your patience. You get impatient with things. And I gave her this quizzical look. So she said, well, next time you do it, I'll tell you. And I said, fine, no problem. And about a couple of weeks later, I had lost my glasses. And they were my first real glasses with a prescription, and I had spent lots of money on them. Anyway, I couldn't find them anywhere in my office or my coat pocket or my car or my purse, and I kept going back and forth, you know, the way we do. I was sort of stomping around and opening things and closing them and muttering, and I don't know how long I did it, but she called me into her office and said, what you're doing right now is what I'm talking about. It needs to stop. And I said, what am I doing? And she described it to me quite concretely. You know, you're picking things up, you're dropping them, you're opening your drawers, you're slamming them shut, you're stomping in and out. And we're in a relatively small cubicle environment. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was a great big space. It was bothering all five of my other colleagues. And she said, we can't get our work done. It just creates such negative tension and negative energy. And I was completely dumbfounded. And that's the genesis of the book, because I sat down and thought, oh my goodness, what I was doing was so natural to me, so much like breathing, that I didn't even know I was doing it, nor did I have any awareness that it was bothering anybody else, because I did it all the time, evidently. When I started checking back with other colleagues and with my family members and my husband and my son, and they both said, oh, yeah, you have these tantrums, but you get over really fast. It's not a big deal. And I was going, what on earth? Long and the short was, I was doing a workshop on dealing with difficult volunteers. I was already presenting a process for volunteer coordinators who had to do some peacemaking with difficult volunteers. And I modified it, how to deal with difficult people. And the process of doing it kept asking folks, you know, what was so scary about confronting the difficult person? And we would practice the conversation. And I began to become much more aware of how I had been difficult my whole life, or it could have been perceived as difficult. I got a letter from one of my friends that I knew in college, and he said, I read your book, and I just thought you were kind of a spoiled brat, but I guess you really had some issues. So clearly, I had been difficult most of my life. The people that came to my workshops, I did some coaching, helping folks who wanted more help after a workshop, for example. They kept asking for more, so I thought, well, I'll put it in a book. I'll just give them the workshop in a book, but it turned out in explaining what doesn't work with difficult people, I ended up telling some of my life story. So it's a little bit about me, but mostly about what we can do if we have a difficult person in our lives, and how to wrap our brain around the other person, what they're doing, how we want to talk to them, then hopefully having a conversation.
By the very nature of labeling somebody difficult, most of us don't want to address that because we don't want that difficulty in our lives. If somebody is, you know, throwing things around and stuff, and you want to address what the behavior is, I think that the biggest concern that most people have is that there'll be an uncomfortable conversation between the two of us. And generally, mm-hmm. it's easier mm-hmm. to be quiet and just let it go, let it blow over, hope that it will blow over, than to address it.
Exactly. And so the first time someone is doing whatever it was I was doing or doing things like that, I can certainly understand why someone would let it blow over. But after a while, it starts to itch at you or it starts to become annoying. And what I was doing was fairly mild. I think what we usually do with someone that I call it itching us, you know, he sort of just rubs us the wrong way, is we put a label on them. We don't necessarily call them difficult, but we call them, manipulative or dictators or contrary or lots of, you know, they make our lives miserable, and we give them lots of credit for how we're feeling about what they're doing. It's usually a negative credit. That's the first step in the whole process, is to be able to really describe the behavior. And as you said, it's one thing to just say, oh, well, you know, she's picking things up and dropping them, and it's annoying and it's frustrating, and I wish she wouldn't do it. Well, you know, if she does it a second time, then I would invite you to say, by the way, are you aware you're doing it? And the good news is, in terms of wanting to avoid the conversation, I have yet to find a person doing these kinds of things who's aware that they're doing it. They really aren't doing it deliberately to make our lives unhappy, even though we think they are. We give them all kinds of motivation, like, ah, they're really just out to get me, you know, and there may be people out to get you, but that's not what we're talking about. So that's the first step, is being able to describe the, quote, difficult behavior. I just labeled the whole thing difficult because people seem to understand what that meant. When I said, we're doing a workshop on dealing with difficult people, they say, oh, good. I often did the workshop around the holiday season because people would say, we don't want to go to so-and-so's house, or we hope so-and-so doesn't come to a holiday party because they make it so awful. And I'm not suggesting that the party is the best time to have the conversation, but knowing that it's coming, it might be a good time to have the conversation before the party.
We're talking with Sarah Elliston this evening. Her new book, Lessons from a Difficult Person and How to Deal with People Like Us. Thinking about the psychology of the other side, usually our unwillingness and inability to deal with difficult people has to do, I think, with the way that we were treated by difficult people when we were children. And
Or bossy people anyway.
Yeah, well, they all seem to fit that same beautiful category. It's for us, it's difficult. And so it's like this, oh, no, I don't want to do that. And why do people have to create these situations where it becomes necessary to critique their behavior? And you turn in sometimes into a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old. What suggestions do you have for us who don't want to deal with the behavior? And we don't want to deal with the behavior, and we don't want to confront the behavior either.
Right. My whole goal is that you don't have to confront the behavior, but you can have a conversation. So the first question really is how important is it that you can maintain a good relationship with this person? Family member or somebody that you supervise or that you work with, or even if you work for, if it's somebody that's going to be of value in your life, then you probably want to have a conversation and not a confrontation, because a confrontation is really painful. And I have a series of exercises in the book for you to walk yourself through, if you will, to exercises to write things down and do some consideration, so that when you have the conversation, you're no longer looking at the other person as difficult or the enemy. You're looking at that person as somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, who's only doing what they're doing because it's a habit and it's worked for them this far. It may not be getting them what they want, but it's the only thing they know to do. And so you're going to invite them to acknowledge that they do something and that maybe it's not getting them what they want. And can you help them make a change? Now, it may not happen in the first conversation. And you need to be aware of that also. But I have had people come to my workshops, for example, and practice the conversations. And the most fun is when I get to be the participant from the workshop, and then they get to be their difficult person. And I take the words that they've developed and the message that they want to send, and I am them. And I demonstrate for them, and there are some of them in the book, too, of how to have the conversation so that it's not confrontational and it's not painful. It's a little scary because they may react negatively. They may think you're calling them names. They may think that you're mean and all kinds of things. But you know you're not. You're not approaching it as like, oh, my God, I have to tell this person they're a bad person. That's not what you're telling them. You're asking them if they know they're doing this, if they know it has this impact, and if that's really what they want. And the only people that are going to say yes are the people that are getting exactly what they want from their negative behavior.
Wow.
In which case, having a conversation is kind of not very useful.
That's when you're talking about getting what you want. It's really interesting because a lot of people, for example, would call Donald Trump a difficult person.
And yes, they would.
Certainly his behavior has gotten him exactly what he wants. Apparently, his entire life. Does that encourage us to behave in that manner?
I don't like to try to guess at these things, but my hunch is he's been married 3 times, so he hasn't really gotten what he wanted in terms of relationships. And he's gone bankrupt a number of times, so that he hasn't really gotten what he wanted in a business area. And he spends an awful lot of time on Twitter having hurt feelings. So I would venture to say that he's not the happiest of campers, but that's just my guess. And I would hate for anybody to quote me on that. Mm-hmm. If he worked for me and he was acting this way and he thought it was working, I would ask him if he really thought having 50% of the people who work for him, for example, hating him, if that really was going to get the teamwork that he wants, if he wants us to be a team. My understanding is that he wants to change the way Washington has did business, and so he's trying to sort of turn everything upside down. And my reaction is, okay, that's great. And is it working, or are you creating more hostility by leaving out all the people who sort of know the history of how things are done? Is that helping or hurting? But I would hope that he would not become a model for who we're going to be. Just because everything becomes a blame, it's somebody else's fault if things don't work perfectly. And one of the things that, one of the elements that the book invites you as a reader to do is to be responsible for your own emotions and your own reactions, and to get them to such a place where you can listen to somebody else's pain or reaction or negativity or whatever, however they react to you, without taking it personally. One of my friends calls it coming to a place of neutrality. So it's not like you don't care about the other person, but whatever they say to you is not going to be a personal, you're not going to take it personally.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know, 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 I know. Sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
Support for KVI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Black Market Brass featuring Obi Original, Friday, December 5th. Minneapolis Afrobeat, Afropop, Afro-Psych band, Black Market Brass is back again to showcase the continuing collaboration with Obi Original.
Following their last single, Battle Ready, they're teaming up again with their latest release, If I Do My Own. Also appearing are Purple Funk Metropolis and BMB DJs. More information about Black Market Brass featuring OB Original is available at thecedar.org.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funds are available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach the art, culture, and heritage of the state's diverse culture. That includes, but is not limited to, indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, recent immigrant communities, and veterans. Application and deadline information is online at mnhum.org/grants.
We're continuing our conversation with Sarah Elliston. Her new book, Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us. And we've been talking about, so far, moving from confrontation to conversation and helping people become aware of how their behavior is affecting us. I ask her at this point if I could use an example from my own life and we could role play it. Any possibility that we could role play one a scenario?
If you want to, sure.
I would.
Do you have a difficult person in mind?
It's somebody that I used to work with, and she was arrogant. She came into the place like she owned the joint. I work in a wellness center, and there's not a lot of us there. And so when she was there, her presence was always known. It seemed like anything that had to do with a group, that she was too good for the group. And she sabotaged everything that we were trying to do. And whenever anybody tried to address the behavior that was going on, she would just pout and go away. And inevitably.
Can I ask some questions?
Yes.
Okay, so when you say someone is arrogant, can you tell me what that person says or does? What was it that led you to have that description?
So we were already an established business, and she came in the adjoining space, and she came in with how she was going to change everything in terms of advertising and how much better everything that she was doing was, and how really irrelevant, or maybe she didn't say irrelevant, but her attitude and tone was that the work and the marketing pieces that we had been doing were basically irrelevant, that we were an irrelevant business, and the only thing that we were missing was her. And her great contacts, and I have 100,000 followers on Facebook and Twitter and things like that, as if those were the things that were going to drive people into our business. And it was like, for me initially, it was like, okay, this seems a little peculiar to me, but if it works, it's fine with me. And it didn't.
Okay. Oh, well, that's too bad. So would it be fair to say that she acted superior, she sounded superior?
Yes.
And in saying that, well, you know, I've got good advertising technique, it's better than yours, and all my Facebook and Twitter people, I've got so many contacts that that'll drive a lot of people in, and we'll have better clients, better customers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one thing. I'm not going to address the tone right now because I think we have enough things to do, but tone is often an issue. Okay, so what about she acted like she owned the joint? What, talk about that. What sort of things did she say or do?
Very loud, like she was at home in her living room instead of in a business, you know? Oftentimes she'd be coming in like she was going to a party as opposed to being in a business. And her business was separate from ours anyway, and so oftentimes it really disrupted what we were doing. And even before she moved in next door, when they were remodeling that place, and the kind of business that I do really requires quiet. They'd be pounding and laughing, and it really made me angry because we're a service business. And I said, would you please keep it down? I have clients here, and this is pretty unprofessional in terms of getting done what I need to get done. And from that point on, it was like I became the enemy and a target. It was madness.
I can see why, yeah. You said she tried to sabotage the group, or you felt that if she was part of the group, she acted to sabotage it?
We had a training, and we were learning how to use some new equipment, and she brought this, and so she brought this trainer in from Utah, and who was supposed to be the best trainer in the world. And so this would have been an opportunity for all of us to begin to bond, because it was a 2-day training all day. And we found out the morning of that she couldn't be bothered. She wasn't going to do the training. And that was a little peculiar to everybody. In the middle of the training, she'd stop the training and she had everybody go out to lunch to a restaurant that took 2 hours to get out of. Not one day, but 2 days. And then in between, somebody paid for her lunch. And she said to the woman, I have the money here for you. And the woman said, that's okay. It's my pleasure to buy your meal. It's, you know, it's a love, just consider it a love offering. And she got into a fight with her because she didn't want to accept anything from her. Again, all in the middle of the training. And then at the end of the training, it was more madness, and she went off again. And it was just like, what is this?
Pretty unhappy person.
For me, one of the most bizarre experiences that I've ever had.
Yeah. In terms of decision-making here, I'm going to pretend that you are the person that created the partnership. I mean, there may have been more than you doing that. There may have been a group of you together that said, why don't you join us in our practices?
But no.
For this conversation,
okay,
let's
cool.
pretend it was you.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm you and you're her, and we'll call her Jane.
Okay.
Because she probably isn't called Jane, right?
No.
So, Jane, thank you for coming to talk to me today. I want you to know how much I value the work that you do with your clients.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I wondered if you value the work I do with my clients.
Oh, of course I do. The work that you do is so important.
Oh, okay. I just wondered because when you were moving in, remember, and you were doing construction in your office, and I asked you if you could keep the noise down, I didn't notice it changing, and I wondered if you realized that kind of comes across as lacking, not thinking my work is very important.
Oh, that's very good. That's very disarming, isn't it?
Oh, now, come on. Don't break the
okay.
rules.
Okay.
Stay as Jane for a little bit here.
Okay. I like that a lot. It's not that I don't value what you're doing, but what I'm doing over here is really important, too.
Yes, I know. And that's why we wanted to group together our practice and your practice. But sometimes, Jane, I don't know if you realize it, but when you come to work and you come into your office, sometimes you're really loud, like you're coming into a nightclub or something. It changes the whole tone of peacefulness and therapy that we have in our offices. And I just wondered if you know you're doing it.
When I come in, I have important things to say. And
to...
I just have important things to, I just have important things to say. You know, I'm such a busy woman and I have so much important work to do that I'm just talking all the time. I'm on the phone all the time, negotiating things all the time, and so get over it.
Well, you are impressive that way, that you do so much, you know, you're always busy. But do you realize that when you come in talking at the top of your voice And because our walls are thin, and now we have this connecting door, so that it makes it very difficult for the meditation and the kind of quiet tone that we need in our office. It's really hard to do when you're conducting business loudly on your phone and in your office. Are you aware of that? I mean, I understand that your work's important, but we just agreed that our work is important too. I just wondered if you had any perception of how difficult it is for us and for our clients.
You know, I honestly hadn't thought about you or your clients.
Yeah, and I wasn't thinking that you were being insensitive. I was thinking that you were wrapped up in your work. You really know what you need to get done, and you have a plan, and you come in and you do it. It's just that the way you do your work is really difficult for our clients. I'd rather not break the partnership because I think we will eventually do good work together, but I wonder if what you really want is for our clients to be uncomfortable.
No, I don't want our clients to be uncomfortable.
Well, yours probably aren't because you're talking to them on the phone and you're working with them, but you do it at a really loud voice. And, you know, it's a lovely voice. It's just not, it doesn't help our clients. And it doesn't help the tone that, you know, we're trying to project and create for healing. I just wanted to talk to you about it, Jane. I mean, I'm not saying we have to do anything different. It's just, if you could think about it, maybe could we talk about it again another day or so?
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful.
So here's what I did. I'm glad. Thank you for saying that. This is nice that you said that. But here's what I did. I didn't call her one name. I pointed out that her work was really important, and I respected that. And I asked her if she respected ours. And she said yes. I'm not sure it's true, but, you know, just from what you said, I got the feeling that she thought she knew better about work than you. And then I never once put a word, a judgment or a critical word in. I kept saying, when you do this, this is the impact it has on our customers. And I asked her if she knew she was doing it and if that's what she wanted. Mm. If she really wanted to have chaos and turmoil in a healing environment. Of course not. And you were awfully sweet to have her say, well, I never even thought about your customers. Do you think she would have said that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really? Wow. Good.
Yeah, easily. You are so disarming. No matter what, you know, I'm thinking that we're going to have a confrontation and you won't do that dance with me.
No, because I've done all these exercises in Sarah Elliston's book, see? So I don't have ego wrapped up in it. I'm not taking anything she says personally, but although she didn't say anything mean, so I didn't have to worry about it. I could have gotten bristly when you said, well, I don't think about your clients at all. You know, I could have sort of thought, well, there. I could have said, see, I told you, you're arrogant and irresponsible, but I've done my homework so that my whole goal is to be in your corner to help you see what your behavior is. And honestly, the reason I wrote the book is because I feel for the difficult person. As you were describing her, my concept was, this is how she feels good about herself. And I don't know what her story is, but I can tell you that at some level, there's some pain. And we all deal with our own pain in different ways. But if I can get myself into a place of wanting to be there for whatever it is for her, then we can have that kind of a, as you call it, disarming conversation. We don't have to be at war, but I can't hate her to start with. You really did give me a lovely example because you called her arrogant and sabotaging the group, and, you know, you used all the kinds of descriptions that we all use when we're talking about a difficult person.
Most of us aren't taught how to address difficult people or difficult situations, so we just don't.
Well, I don't think we are. I think we're taught to be really, really nice. Bottom line, we all want to be loved. So we do everything we can think of to make the person like us. And if that's being quiet or getting out of their way or whatever it is, then we do that. And then eventually we snap. Or we put labels on it. We just say, well, she's arrogant, or he's narcissistic, or she's a manipulator, or whatever. And none of those names help. All those do is put walls between us. Remember, I'm the difficult person, right? So my heart goes out to the woman. My heart goes out to Jane, wherever she is and whatever she's doing. I know the pain of feeling like something's not right, but I don't know what it is, and so I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
And, of course, it's always somebody else's fault.
Totally. Yeah. I was waiting for you to blame the construction people for all the noise that you hadn't. It wasn't your fault. It's never our fault.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a little bit also of what the book is inviting you as the reader to do, to be responsible for yourself and not let... Do you know the book, The Four Agreements?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of the four agreements that he suggests is to not take things personally. That's something that I didn't put that in the book in quite those terms. I wish I had. I'll put that in the next one. One of the things that's happened is that people have said, well, are you going to write a book about, you know, the difficult people and how they can change and what they should do? And I had sort of joked about it, but I'm beginning to see that something like his book, Miguel Ruiz, the Four Agreements, something like that book that says, see each person as a person, don't take what they say about yourself personally. So it's just so much easier to go through life that way. I mean, I have to talk to myself every day about it, myself. I mean, I'm not perfect at this at all.
I know, but you're so talented and skilled at staying present and being clear about your point, because not rehearsing and not being clear about what your objectives are, you get lost in the landmines mm-hmm. that others set for you. And my goodness. Sarah, do you have a website?
I do. It's just my name, Sarah, has an H on it. Sarah Elliston, ELLISTON.com. If you sign up for my email list, and I promise not to email you very much, but if you give me your email address, then I'll send you the first chapter of the book, the sort of the prelude to the book, on as an ebook, and then also a couple of pages from my workshop, some of the handouts that we use in the workshop to help you get started in the exercises.
As I was talking to you, you just shifted me from my sense I was going to get into the character and be mean, and I couldn't because you didn't give me anywhere. You didn't give mean anywhere to go. Thank you so much for this conversation. Talking with Sarah Elliston, Lessons from a Difficult Person, How to Deal with People Like Us.
Support for KFAI comes from The Dakota, presenting Nicholas David, St. Nick's Show, and album release Wednesday, December 3rd. After 5 years in the making, Nicholas Davis is celebrating his first vinyl release, More Than Music. The St. Paul singer-songwriter has been making music for nearly 30 years. Nicholas David blends soul, country, gospel, and rock to create a sound unlike anyone else. More information about Nicholas David, St. Nick's Show, and album release is available at dakotacooks.com.
What are the benefits of beet juice? Many people are familiar with the red beet root, but did you know that this common produce market vegetable contains some pretty potent nutritional components you might not know about? The beetroot is a superfood veggie, very beneficial for lowering blood pressure, increasing athletic performance, purifying the bloodstream, improving cardiovascular health, and reducing inflammation in the body. You can eat raw beets, and there is also some nutrition in cooked beets, but it's actually the raw pressed beetroot juice, the extracted juiced liquid, that produces the greatest health-enhancing effects. When vegetables are juiced, they are 10 times more nutrient-rich because their nutritive compounds are highly concentrated. As a result, this bright red juice contains substantial amounts of antioxidants, naturally occurring nitrates, betaine, and iron, all super healthy ingredients that beets are particularly high in. From the Middle Ages, beetroot was used as a treatment for a variety of conditions, especially illnesses relating to digestion and the blood. The benefits of beet juice. Beets and the blood helps to lower blood pressure. There is no food closer to the color of the blood than the juice of a beet. And as it turns out, beets are an exceptionally great food for an overall healthy bloodstream. According to a study in the American Heart Association's journal called Hypertension, drinking a cup of beetroot juice daily may help lower blood pressure. Participants who consume this amount daily experienced an average 10-point decrease in their blood pressure levels over a 24-hour period. This sparked the new phrase in health headlines, a cup of beet juice a day keeps the doctor away. High blood pressure, directly linked to cardiovascular disease and strokes, affects more than 77 million adults in the U.S. The benefits of beet juice and its nitrate content may be an easy dietary adjunct for many Americans. Beetroot is high in nitrates. When some people hear the word nitrate, they think of the chemical preservative sodium nitrate, a known carcinogen often found in hot dogs, bacon, or lunch meat. Beets are naturally high in nitrates. However, these substances are quite different than synthetic nitrates. They are plant-based elements that have favorable rather than harmful effects when ingested. In fact, the phytonitrates in beetroot juice when consumed are one of the known benefits that play a significant role in reducing and maintaining blood pressure levels. Your body converts nitrate into nitric acid in the blood, which helps to open up the blood vessels and normalize blood flow. There are other dietary nitrate-rich foods to consider, as well as beet juice. Dietary nitrates are also abundant in green leafy vegetables, so you want to juice your beet greens as well as the root. In fact, mixing your green juicing veggies with beets is a great way to cut the sometimes intensely sweet, rooty flavor of the red beet. As we mentioned, for maximum benefits and therapeutic use, it is best to drink the juice rather than eat the beet. You simply get more concentrated phytonutrients that can help to reduce hypertension and its related conditions. We advocate the use of beetroot juice to achieve this goal, along with a health-promoting diet and exercise regimen. Beet juice often has an energizing effect on the body, which may be helpful to get yourself to the gym or motivated to do a light cardio workout. Nitrates in beet juice boost athletic performance. The nitrate content in beet juice has been shown to be very helpful for athletes, allowing the body to recuperate better from physical activity by increasing the amount of oxygen and blood flow to the muscles, heart, and brain. This helps to also improve stamina, cardiovascular endurance, as well as enable faster recovery. There are a number of studies regarding beet juice intake and athletic performance. One of them was done by Dr. Andrew Jones, head of sport and health science at the University of Exeter in England, who successfully demonstrated significant improvement in high-intensity training with a group of sports rowing crew athletes. Another study conducted showed positive response to using varying amounts of beetroot juice within an exercise regime. It was concluded that these findings have important implications for the use of beetroot to enhance cardiovascular health and exercise performance in young adults. Betaine, one of the benefits of beet juice. Beets are especially rich in a micronutrient called betaine or trimethylglycine. Betaines are helpful for the elimination of toxins and the reduction of the amino acid homocysteine linked to improved heart health. Betaine has been documented by the University of Maryland to help in the decrease of high homocysteine levels. High amounts of homocysteine can damage red blood vessels, causing strokes, blood clots, atherosclerosis, and heart disease. Betaine functions very closely with the group of methyl donors, choline, vitamin B12, folic acid, and the amino acid methionine. A methyl donor is simply any substance that can transfer a methyl group, a carbon atom attached to three hydrogen atoms, to another substance. Many important biochemical processes rely on methylation, including the metabolism of lipids and DNA. Scientists suspect that adequate methylation of DNA can prevent the expression of harmful genes, such as cancer genes. It's quite likely that our body's ability to methylate declines with age, contributing to the aging process, and therefore supplementation could well be beneficial. Dr. Ray Sahelian. According to the National Cancer Institute, methyl donors have been linked to decreased risk of breast, colon, and pancreatic cancer. Studies published by the American Journal of Epidemiology and the American Journal of Nutrition suggest diet rich in these micronutrients may help you avoid cancer plus many other health problems. Beets may help beat colon cancer. The pigment beta-cyanin, a type of betalain, is one of the well-known benefits of beet juice and is what helps give beets their deep red color. It is actually this antioxidant that acts as a primary cancer-fighting agent, shown to be particularly successful at preventing colon cancers. Likewise, beetroot juice naturally increases the quantity of CD8 cells present in the colon. These cells are known to protect against and destroy cancerous growths. Dr. Mikhail Tombak, a Russian longevity scholar, concluded that the benefits of beet juice do indeed seem to prevent diseases of the digestive system and large intestine specifically. He also found in his studies that beets help to break up calcified stones in the bladder and kidneys. It was discovered in the 1950s by a Hungarian doctor named Dr. Ferenczi that a quart of juice a day as therapy for his cancer patients efficiently eradicated cancerous tumors much the same way they dissolved kidney stones. Purifies blood, detoxifies liver. One of the major benefits of beet juice is that it contains the mentioned group of powerful antioxidant pigments called betalains. These are components that help to boost the immune system, but also act as anti-inflammatories, antifungals, and detoxification aids. The betalains in raw beet juice are one of the best blood purifiers, cleaning the bloodstream and helping the liver do its job more effectively. We recommend juicing beets during a yearly or bi-yearly juice cleanse or juice fast to help detoxify and rebuild healthy blood cells. We are all exposed to toxins in our everyday environment. The benefits of beet juice can greatly assist in the process of detoxification from harmful pollutants, heavy metals, and chemicals in the air we breathe, the food we eat, and the water we drink. Beetroot juice, along with schisandra and milk thistle seed, can be especially supportive for those with hepatitis or stagnation in the liver organ. Increases glutathione and lowers cholesterol. Beets, and especially the juice from beets, also helps to detoxify the body via an increase in glutathione production. Glutathione is a master molecule that binds with toxins and pollutants that enter the bloodstream and eliminates them through the bowels. The juice is also helpful in reducing the bad cholesterol and triglycerides, which restrict blood flow and movement around the body. It is also known to substantially increase HDL, the good cholesterol. All of these factors help to protect against arteriosclerosis and heart disease. Vitamin C and folic acid. Beets also boost the immune system because they contain significant amounts of vitamin C. In addition, they are particularly known for their high amounts of folic acid and are therefore recommended for pregnant women for proper spinal cord development of the baby. Folic acid also helps to manufacture red blood cells. High in iron and carotenoids. Because of the high amounts of iron in beets, eating or drinking their juice helps to replenish this nutrient. People with low amounts of iron often feel their energy levels heighten with the regular consumption of beet juice, which helps to prevent anemia. Many women tend to crave beets during menstruation to help replenish the iron levels. The iron molecule is an important component of hemoglobin, and is what binds to oxygen. If we have adequate amounts of iron in the bloodstream, the air we breathe can efficiently be transported throughout the body. Raw beets contain the carotenoid lutein and zeaxanthin, which are extremely beneficial for the retina of the eye and assist in protecting the skin. The benefits of beet juice: helps with inflammation, increases blood flow, provides energy, good for anemia, beneficial for reducing high homocysteine levels, good for eyesight and the skin, helps maintain a healthy colon, increases supply of oxygen to the brain and body, good for endurance exercise and recovery, strengthens the immune system, increases glutathione, purifies the blood and liver. How to juice beets. Beets can be juiced, of course, in a juicer, but they can also be blended in a blender and squeezed through a nut milk bag or fine mesh strainer. Be aware that the juice is like a natural dye and can stain chopping boards or kitchen appliances if not immediately washed in hot soapy water. It is always best to make your own beet juice as opposed to buying it pre-made. Fresh juice is packed with enzymes and all the micronutrients you want to consume. No packaged product really compares, in our opinion. Therapeutic dose, 1 to 2 cups per day. We don't really mind drinking straight beet juice and love the flavor, but because it is quite sweet and earthy tasting, some people don't prefer to drink it straight, and really there is no reason why you have to. You can combine the liquid in many juicing recipes that taste quite delicious. We have a nice beet juice recipe that we have posted below this video. Raw, cooked, powdered, or juiced beets. Beets lose their health benefits significantly when cooked or steamed. Juicing the raw beetroot is the best way to get the highest health benefits. Eating raw beets is also recommended, although not nearly as concentrated. The quantity of beets and fiber you would have to consume to get the same benefits of beet juice far exceed any small amount of beets you could eat in one serving. They are still great to include on salads or in various raw food recipes. One of our favorite side salads is grated carrot, grated beetroot, and chopped parsley. There are powdered beet juice extracts and beet powders on the market today that offer an alternative to drinking the juice. The powder may be more convenient for some people to use and add to beverages. Precaution: always consult your physician if you are taking prescription medications for high blood pressure. Avoid beet juice if you have candida overgrowth, as it is too high in sugar content.
Do you have a sweet tooth? Yet are you trying to lay off the sugars? That's not always easy to do. Research published in the journal Diabetes Care in 2003 suggests a sweet spice might be just what the doctor ordered for people with type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. The incidence of cardiovascular disease increases 2 to 4-fold in people with type 2 diabetes. There is no doubt that the cause of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease is multifactorial. However, diet definitely plays a major role. It is known that treatment and prevention of these diseases are heavily based on dietary and physical activity components. Research and data suggest spices such as cinnamon, cloves, bay leaves, and turmeric display benefits in controlling type 2 diabetes. Studies on rabbits have found that supplementing their diet with fenugreek decreased their total cholesterol levels. Rat studies have shown positive effects on bad cholesterol when they are given curry leaf and mustard seeds. A human-based research on cinnamon was done to see whether there is a dose response of cinnamon associated with type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. The study was conducted using a total of 60 people with type 2 diabetes. 30 were men and 30 were women within a similar age group, similar duration of diabetes, and similar severity of the disease. The subjects were divided into placebo and cinnamon groups. They further divided the subjects into 3 cinnamon amount groups. They were 1 gram of cinnamon per day, 3 grams of cinnamon per day, and 6 grams of cinnamon per day groups. They did not change any of the medications the subjects were taking during the study. They found that all of the subjects taking cinnamon had a reduction of blood sugars, triglycerides, LDL cholesterol, and total cholesterol. It was not clear if taking less than 1 gram a day would have any benefit. Benefits in reduced blood sugar levels were seen after just 20 days in the 6 grams a day group. Reduction in triglycerides was seen after 40 days in all groups, but the 6 gram group saw results after just 20 days. After 40 days, triglycerides were reduced by 23 to 30% in all groups. This indicates that long-term cinnamon consumption has a greater effect than short-term use. Decreases in total cholesterol were similar at 20 and 40 days. The reduction of LDL cholesterol was seen in the 3 and 6 grams per day groups. LDL reduction in the 1 gram group was seen only after 60 days. The mechanism of how this works is not understood completely. Extracts of cinnamon has also shown to be a powerful antioxidant, which would lead to additional health benefits beyond lowering risk factors for heart disease and diabetes. There was also information from the study that suggests the health benefits are sustained even after consumption was stopped. This is indicating that cinnamon consumption would not have to be done daily. In conclusion, the authors suggest that with this information, that those with type 2 diabetes, elevated LDL cholesterol, elevated triglycerides, or total cholesterol may benefit from regular inclusion of cinnamon in their daily diet. They also suggest that cinnamon may benefit the remainder of the population in preventing these diseases. It is important to note that this does not mean you should be out buying sticky cinnamon rolls every morning, but that cooking or supplementing with real cinnamon could be a very healthy habit. This has been a Health Note by Dr. Jonathan Arnold of Arnold Chiropractic and Acupuncture.
These arms are mine. They are lonely, lonely and feeling blue. These arms of mine.
Tender lips to oh, oh. listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, or online at KFAI.org. Well, so am I. Yeah, me too.
Shouldn't everybody?
I mean, this is not the kind of music that comes from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
No.